Chapter 4. Mr. Deese told me the next day that when he was certain Rhoda was dead, he finally left her in the swing on the front porch. He went to his bathroom where he stripped and showered and saw her blood spin down the drain. He changed into work clothes and waited for the police and the ambulance. He watched her house while holding a loaded shotgun, anxious to blast anything that moved. But there was no movement. No sound. In the distance, he could barely hear a siren. His wife kept the children locked in the back bedroom, where she huddled with them in the bed, under a blanket. Michael kept asking about his mother, and who was that man? But Teresa was too traumatized to speak. She managed only a low groaning sound as she sucked her fingers, and shook as if she were freezing. Before long, Benning Road was alive with red and blue flashing lights. Rhoda's body was photographed at length before it was taken away. Her home was cordoned off by a squad of deputies, led by Sheriff Coley himself. Mr. Deese, still holding his shotgun, gave his statement to an investigator, then to the sheriff. Shortly after 2 a.m., a deputy arrived with the news that a doctor in town had been notified and had suggested that the children be brought in for a look. They rode in the back seat of a patrol car, Michael clutching Mr. Deese and Teresa in the lap of his wife. At the hospital, they were given a mild sedative and placed together in a semi-private room where the nurses brought them cookies and milk until they finally went to sleep. Later in the day, an aunt arrived from Missouri and took them away. My phone rang seconds before midnight. It was Wiley Meek, the paper's photographer. He had picked up the story on the police scanner and was already hanging around the jail waiting to ambush the suspect. Cops were everywhere, he said, his excitement barely under control. Hurry, he urged me. This could be the big one. At the time, I lived above an old garage next to a decaying but still grand Victorian mansion known as the Hocut House. It was filled with elderly Hocuts, three sisters and a brother, and they took turns being my landlord. Their five-acre estate was a few blocks from the Clanton Square and had been built a century earlier with family money. It was covered with trees, overgrown flower beds, thick patches of mature weeds, and enough animals to stock a game preserve. Rabbits, squirrels, skunks, possums, raccoons, a million birds, a frightening assortment of green and black snakes, all non-poisonous, I was reassured, and dozens of cats. But no dogs. The Hocuts hated dogs. Each cat had a name, and a major clause in my verbal lease was that I would respect the cats. Respect them I did. The four-room loft apartment was spacious and clean and cost me the ridiculous sum of $50 a month. If they wanted their cats respected at that price, fine with me. Their father, Miles Hocut, had been an eccentric doctor in Clanton for decades. Their mother died during childbirth, and according to local legend, Dr. Hocut became very possessive of the children after her death. To protect them from the world, he concocted one of the biggest lies ever told in Ford County. He explained to his children that insanity ran deeply in the family, and thus they should never marry lest they produce some hideous strain of idiot offspring. His children worshipped him, believed him, and were probably already exposed to some measure of unbalance. They never married. The son, Max Hocut, was 81 when he leased me the apartment. The twins, Wilma and Gilma, were 77, and Melberta, the baby, was 73 and completely out of her mind.